I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, excerpts from our Will Ag Outlook panel in Sykeston, Missouri, recorded December the 11th, 2013. Our panelists included Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises.
Over the past 3 months, we exported 133 million bushels of grain. And you can kind of break that down to 99,000 bushels of grain per running hour. We loaded 70 vessels. We unloaded 1,800 barges, which is about 600,000 per working day. We unloaded 4,300 cars, railroad cars, unloaded 6,000 trucks, and broke all records. So after a very slow couple of years in the export market, the export demand has finally, at least for the time being here, has turned on a positive note. Of course, soybeans are the biggest beneficiary of the demand that we've seen in export activity over the past 3 months. Now, going back to the charts, and the chart is a chart, and of course a close friend of mine tells me there's all kinds of charts laying at the bottom of the ocean. With that said, technically, I kind of like the markets in here for a recovery rally. Now, don't get me wrong that we're starting some major bull moves here. But soybeans did finish out the month of November with a monthly reversal to the upside. It is on track seasonally to climb higher into January, and then we begin to flatten out to see how the South American crop develops. And then we'll see whether or not we can keep the seasonal stronger as we go on into the summer months. The function of the market with the strong demand that we've seen in soybeans is to buy soybean acres. And that is, I think, going to be the key force here in the market as we go down the road. Now, corn seems to be following soybeans as of today, but we still have 20 days left in the month of December. We started out the first week of December here with a weekly reversal to the upside. We're trying to show some follow-through on that weekly reversal and maybe extend that into a monthly reversal to the upside. Seasonally, December is, as on average, one of the strongest up months for corn there is, and then we'll run into the January crop report buzzsaw and we'll see what happens there. But at least the thing that I look at is we've bounced off of the long-term trend line on November or on soybean futures, drawn off of the 05 low, the 10 low, and then this low that we just made here this fall. So the long-term monthly trend line is intact. We bounced off that with a monthly reversal to the upside and has shown some follow-through as we've gone through the first week or so of December. Corn is in the same position. Trend line support drawn off of the 05 low in December in monthly corn. Off of $1.85 and three quarters, came into play around 4 and a quarter. We dipped below that 15 cents. We went down to 4.10, and now we have reversed out of that low, and we are now trading back above that trend line. So I see that as a positive development. December corn futures are going to expire, I think, this Friday. March is going to take over with the carry and chart. Just going to make the monthly chart look good. But I think on an individual basis, March corn futures is also in a monthly reversal up pattern. And as a technician, what we try to do is to get ahead of the fundamentals. So I would say, based upon what I see happening on the price action, that as we go forward here, the news may not be as bearish as the supply-demand table sheets would imply. And I mean the supply-demand balance sheets, if you study them and if you assume averages, and I'm not too sure what an average is anymore, but we could be digging ourselves a pretty big hole on the supply front. And it just, you know, you can just break yourself out into a sweat if everything goes well. But for the time being here, the monthly ups are implying that maybe the supply-demand tables are a trick in here or lying to us. But we'll have to see. But if you assume averages, we're headed for a train wreck. Similar to probably Obamacare. Both. Corn first, beans are going to follow.
Yep.
Jackie, you mentioned, and I'm wondering about this, that it's set up to buy, that we need to buy soybean acres. It sure looks like that, at least when you look at your mice, right? But the deferreds aren't quite telling that story, which is when we need to buy soybean acres, are they? Or are they not?
Well, it's definitely not, and it's being held down primarily because when you look at Brazil, you know, it's very likely that South America is not going to plant nearly as much corn this year. And so for the first time in years, we're talking about what they call safrinha beans. In other words, you know, beans after, double crop beans is what we're looking at. And so yesterday on the report, they still kept Brazil's production at 88 million metric tons. It's pretty common knowledge that it's going to be probably 90 million. And then if they do come in, down in Brazil, I talk a lot to Dr. Michael Cordier, and he said they're being very tight-lipped about what they're doing. They're not buying a lot of inputs for the safrinha beans or anything right now because they really don't want to show their hand. And, you know, 90 million is based on the current crop that they've got going. So when you look at the deferreds, Todd, you can't expect the trade to look at it any differently. You know, they're going to say, okay, if these guys come in with this type of a crop, we're going to be very, you know, we're going to have to compete with them. There's no question. I think we have a lot of things still going for us. My concern at the moment is old crop beans, and I don't know how many of you are sitting on old crop beans out here, but I know we're at a corn growers meeting, but Argentina's been playing a lot of games, and I don't know how much you've heard about it. Argentina is constantly talking about devaluing their currency. A common joke in Argentina, which is probably very real, is that there are more Argentinians sleeping on the faces of American presidents than anywhere else in the world, because they are paying up to 50% higher than what the actual exchange rate is if you would go to a bank just to get American dollars, because they understand what it's like. The government has been saying that their inflation rate is about 10.4%, the private state's 26%, and yesterday the International Monetary Fund came out and said they had to get it corrected, that the government had to give the true inflation rate. Well, what does this mean to you? The Argentinian farmer is sitting on about $630 billion worth of U.S. dollars of old beans. And the government is trying every way it possibly can to get them to get those beans into the market, into the pipeline. Why? Because of the tax rate down there. I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. It used to be 35%. So they want to generate tax dollars. They've got major problems. And so from an old crop bean standpoint, I think you have to be very aware of that. Everything looks great. I mean, our stocks to use is great. Our carry out is great here. But you dump that kind of beans on the marketplace and it is not going to be positive to nearby beans. And I don't think it'll hit our new crop beans nearly as hard. But I question as to whether we're going to plant as many bean acres. Okay, now we go to the corn grower side of it. For all of you, how many of you were surprised at your yields this year, considering the weather? I knew I'd see a lot of hands. I work with guys all over the U.S. and Canada, and I can't tell you in the U.S. there wasn't anybody who was surprised. I had a guy who, out in Nebraska, they had 200 bushel dry land corn. Just wouldn't have given you 2 cents that they were going to have 100 bushel dry land corn. And so, you know, we're in a situation at this point in time that with the way corn performed this year, I still believe the American farmer is going to plant corn. And I think the thing that's important for you to understand is we had intentions of 98.87 million acres of planting. Okay, if you go down to 92 million, in other words, you chop off about 7 million acres, trend line yields 160. That's a 13.6 billion bushel crop. I think that we've got a chance to see a higher usage. I think we could push corn usage back up to 1.8. We're at 1.45 right now. If we push it to 1.8, that's a use level without changing anything else of 13.35. So if we come in at a 13.6 billion bushel crop, what does that do to our carryout? It still increases it, right? So I agree with Dan. You know, the potential is there for some very serious problems. And so, in general, I think that, you know, we heard China just rejected another load of corn today, by the way, and it looks like there's going to be 3 more rejections. I don't think that that's ultimately going to mean they're going to cancel them. I think when you look at their domestic price, they can still import our corn for about $304 a ton versus their domestic corn, which is $406 a ton. So they're not stupid, but they know what that does to the futures. How many of you guys were disappointed yesterday in what the futures reaction was to the USDA report? You know, it was a very positive report. Positive on the world side. We didn't expect that. And yet we ended up negative. Why? At every meeting I go to, the one thing, if you don't take anything else away from me, I want you to take away that the futures market is more than just a name. It's the future, and they already had all those prices built in. So what level of production have we got built in on 2014 prices right now? That's the question you have to ask yourself, and you have got to protect yourself. I'm going to hand it
January beans are up about 5 cents, 13.43¾ or something thereabouts. See what I mean about knowing all the fundamental numbers and findings? She has it. It's there all the time, and it's hard to stay in front of her. January beans are 13.43¾. Were you telling them this is a sale?
Well, I am. Yes, that's what I'm telling them. If you want to take a chance on the board. Or don't take a chance at all. I mean, you know, it's a situation where I don't think you can take the chance. The government in Argentina is really it's a tough environment that they're in, and they are desperate. So I believe they're going to figure out a way. Just this week they came out now and said they're going to offer the farmer some kind of a piece of paper that would be worth so much in American dollars, you know, and everything else. But I don't know if the farmer's going to bite for that, because it isn't that long ago, within this last decade, where they saw them come in and do a similar thing and then devalue everything, and it just raised havoc. So, but it could raise havoc with you. And yes, I'm saying this is a sell, is what I'm saying.
One of the things our listeners...
Yeah, basis is good also.
Yes?
You're talking about everybody else in dollar. What about the U.S. dollar? Being debunked over here, too.
I couldn't hear the question.
The U.S. dollar is awful close to being defunct here. You've been talking about the rest of the currencies around.
Well, oh, yeah, right. I mean, you know, but you're a commodity person, right? Wouldn't you rather see it at 79 than at 90? I mean, you know, from an export standpoint, that's why Dan's talking about the tremendous demand for exports, is because the U.S. dollar is still at a level where it's cheaper for them to buy from us in a lot of cases than it is from somewhere else. And then you've got to add on to that the freight situation. You know, back when you roll back and you look at, we had record high freight prices. They did the same thing we used to do with corn, right? We had good corn prices. What did we do? We planted corn fence row to fence row and wrecked the price. The same thing happened with the shipping people. It took 2 years for them to ruin their prices. And so there's so much competition from a shipping standpoint that's why we can push all the beans to China that we can too, because freight rates are on our side, not necessarily on South America's side. But as far as the U.S. dollar goes, oh, you know, there's absolutely no question that there is an issue. I think that the biggest issue that we face with the U.S. dollar is if they do start to taper bond buying, the dollar starts to go higher. That makes it harder for us to sell product. That's the biggest thing. As far as, are you saying that you think the dollar's going away? Well, I guess it can happen at any time, but boy, I think it's my opinion would be it's unlikely, probably in our lifetime. Oh no, I only wish. You know, but
John, you often when I talk to you, we talk much about broader issues like the US dollar, the economy, the global economy. What's changed in the last 3 years with anything from your perspective?
I'm in your camp. The US deficit is just going out the roof. Continue
yep.
to go out the roof.
I agree.
We're at $17 trillion. We've got an unfunded liability to Medicare, Medicaid, of close to, and Social Security, close to $100 billion. And now we have Obamacare, which who knows what it's going to cost. So I'm very pessimistic on the dollar long term. But having said that, it's a race to the bottom because everybody else is doing the same thing.
That's right.
Japan is in far worse shape than we are. Europe is in terrible shape.
Yep.
So it's sort of pick your poison. If you want to be bullish one currency versus the other, you got to say who's not as bad as the other guy. We're all bad.
Yep.
I think the purchasing power, like Jackie says about Argentina, Argentina's in a mess because something like 35 to 40% of their total tax revenue comes from the soybean export tax.
Yep.
And they're dying off. The farmers won't sell. The farmers are holding soybeans as a inflation hedge. Or a currency hedge, and they're right. So it's quite a mess.
Wait, so let me ask you a different question. Are you wanting, in the longer run, for instance, to be an owner of farmland or assets, or do you prefer to have cash?
I don't want to have cash. I've unfortunately sold too much farmland last year at a cheap price, $3,900 an acre, which y'all probably think is a joke. But the delta always stays much lower than prices here. So I've been buying houses around the country and condominiums.
See, you're trading acres for homes.
I guess that's the story. Because, you know, farmland in our neck of the wood tripled in the last 3 years. And I bought a lot of farmland for $400 to $500 an acre and thought, boy, I'm a genius of selling for $3,900 and now it's $5,000. And who knows where it's. But on the other hand, I've got to apologize to all of y'all because I am very bearish on agricultural prices. I'm extremely bearish. And I'm a farmer. Also, my main livelihood is I'm a commodity speculator. And I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, farming to me is much riskier than speculating commodities. If I'm wrong with being short soybeans, I can get out. I can get out in 30 seconds. But once you plant a soybean crop or a cotton crop, you own it. So.
But. Okay, I'd like to start kind of the top level again with you and then work your way through the things you do. Because I'm interested in your view. So you could buy land, but you invested in homes. You could buy farmland, but you've invested in homes. Is that because you're bearish agriculture?
Well, homes have collapsed in price. Okay.
So it's more because you're bullish home prices.
Well, homes have collapsed in price, and farmland's gone crazy, and I think soybeans are going to $6 or $7, and I think corn's going to get to $3.50, maybe under $3. So if that happens, cash rents get killed, farmland values get killed, and so forth and so on. But on the other hand, I'm exactly like this man up here. I think the dollar is heading for oblivion. So it puts you in a hard situation. But I truly look at farmland as overpriced, and technology is catching up with farmland. And I want to touch on that art, something probably y'all haven't thought about. But I was driving home one day in the summer listening to Bloomberg Radio, and they had a guest on there who said, well, he wrote a book about China. He says between 2016 and 2025, the Chinese population is going to drop 25%. Drop 25%. I said, that's impossible. Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the Wall Street Journal ran an article about China's population. They said, well, the one-child policy has been on for 30 years now, started in 1980, 33 years. The demographers expect every generation coming up in China will be 25% or more less than the preceding generation. That means we're looking at 25% less soybeans, copper, electronics, you name it. So we have, in the farm community, have benefited an awful lot by Wall Street, et cetera, preaching the idea that as the Chinese rural economy moves to urban economy, they stop eating 1 pound of rice and eat 1 pound of pork, because it takes three and a half, four pounds of feed to feed 1 pound of pork rather than eating rice. So we have benefited from that urbanization of China. And that theory goes on and on. But if you believe the population is about to start going down, it sets the entire idea of China buying on its head and everything about it in relating to agriculture. Meanwhile, we see technology moving on. The other day, a Japanese institute came out and said, we have rice varieties we've just created that will work in 70% of the rice grown in the world. Right now, they're yielding 13 to 36% more than ones you're producing right now. Well, we've seen corn yields go up and up and up. We haven't seen any breakout in soybean yields. I keep thinking, I wonder how long we're going to keep them in the 40s, 42, 43, et cetera. I thought this summer was interesting because we had a really bad growing season in the Midwest and still made a 30, 43 bushel yield. What happens in a good growing season? So, again, I'm going to apologize for being so bearish, but I'm a farmer, and I think 50% of farming is marketing. I mean, you can be the world's greatest farmer and the world's poorest marketer, and you're not going to do well. So I encourage, I do this programs with Todd simply to talk to farmers. And I've been 100% hedged on corn for this year, started at $6, so that's behind me. I'm 75% hedged on all my crops that I'll plant this spring, including the winter wheat's in the ground. And I'm a little about 55% covered on 15 corn futures and 15 beans. I started selling the corn around $5.
Wait, did you say you're 15 or 55% on 15 corn?
I'm 55% hedged on all the land I'm going to farm in 2015, including beans, corn, and wheat.
Yep, smart.
So, you know, I'm that's just the way I operate. We've had long only hedge funds, which have been a godsend for farmers because they pay too much for out futures. You know, we used to have a deal where if beans went to $12, new crop beans might be $8. Well, in the advent of long only hedge funds, if old crop beans were $12, it will. My goodness, inflation's marching on. Why shouldn't new crop beans be $12? And we've had some extraordinary hedging opportunities. Like right now, we have corn at 40 cents a bushel higher for next year. And I think we're going to have a big corn crop again next year. And
yep,
miserable prices. And I think the USDA is 400 million bushels too high on this year's consumption estimate of feed. The reason I say that is there's a very strong correlation between pounds of meat produced and feed fed. If you have unchanged animal, unchanged meat production, you tend to have unchanged feed usage. Well, right now, the USDA is forecasting meat production is coming in this crop year that started in September up something like 0.5 to 1%. If they have corn and beef consumption going up 12.7%, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's just a pipe dream. So that's one story. Another story is Brazil. And like Jackie says, we're going to see a good bit of switching out of Safrina corn in Brazil, which is planted in February, to soybeans. And we're seeing them right now. Argentina is still planting corn, and I'm going to bet when it's all said and done, they're going to end up with less corn and more bean acres. So, in my view, the biggest downside risk on the entire board is soybeans.
Well, One of the good news points is 2 weeks ago, China evidently has already recognized that their population is going down. They did change their one-child policy, and now what they did is they said that if either parent or both parents are only children due to the one-child policy, they can now have two children. So we probably have a two-year lag here or three-year lag before we start to see some improvement in that population. But it is coming down the pike. You know, John's right. You know, when he talks about how much he has hedged, I'm about 85% sold on 14 corn, and I'm not quite 55%. With my guys, I'm about 25% sold on 15 using the board alone. And I think that we, as grain growers, have to change our mindset and our philosophy. You know, when you work with cattle growers, and some of you might be cattle growers or were cattle growers, you're always thinking about out in the future, you know, because you're buying your feeder cattle here, they're going to finish here, and you're looking to that future price all the time. And a lot of guys go out and they hedge next year's April 14 was hedged already in 13, and April 12 was done back in 11. I think that as grain growers, we have to do that. And when you look, in other words, you hedge opportunity. If you look at 2015 as an example, at this point, yesterday it closed at 479 and beans were at 1156. What was the opportunity? In November of 12, it traded at 615. And in November of 12, beans traded at 1333. There was opportunity there. Okay, and so, you know, it's difficult. You can't go out into the cash market and necessarily do it. So you have to figure out a way to be able to capture that, and that's what John is talking about, and give yourself the opportunity to be able to hedge in a potential profit. And, you know, I think that, at least with my guys, one of the things that is the hardest to do is to, you're in the heat of looking at this year's crop, you're thinking about harvesting or everything else, and then somebody's talking to you about hedging next year's crop and the crop after. And, you know, it just doesn't have the importance necessarily as what the nearby does, because that's what you're doing. You're hands-on. I took the stance, let's look at it more as hedging our crop insurance premium, or, you know, our crop insurance payment. Go out there and get that. And that's why I'm 85% hedged, because I went out there and I just said, guys, We can put in 570 puts right now, sell two calls above the market, and looking down the pike at what the trend was and how many acres we had planted and everything else, and sit back and let the market prove to us it's going to go higher. You know, let's just do that. And when I talked to them about hedging it as December 14 corn, nobody called. They all just kind of looked. I'm sure they were all thinking, boy, she's just out in never, never land. And when I talked to them about it being crop insurance, everybody said, hey, that's only February. That's not that far away. So, you know, if you can help yourself by thinking about it not being the following December, but thinking about it being, this is an important price to you, that crop insurance price. I think last night Matt Bennett at Mount Vernon said at 185 APH, if we have a 465 price, it was $150 an acre difference, right? Isn't that what he said last night? That's a huge amount of money. And so as we move forward, I think that it just becomes more and more important. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you a little bit on the feed side, okay? Only from the standpoint that I say that I think some of their feed use number is a bumped up number, because I believe we're going to feed more corn than we did distillers. You know, and that's where some of it is coming from. I'm concerned because of the PED in hogs. You know, we lost a lot of baby pigs. And that means we're going to have less feed use in the hogs when we get into the first quarter at least. But I still think that, you know, they may be a little too high, but I don't think they're that much too high.
Okay, Dan, so you've heard those two talk about
the hogs. It's going to crush me now.
When I incorporate looking at how bad the fundamentals are, I guess I'm in the opinion that this year-end rally that we may have going, it ain't very powerful. We were up again a little bit today. The 1346 area on January beans is a real hard spot. We did punch above it yesterday, but then we came back and closed below it. We're still below it. We need to clear that level to really open up the gates to maybe go up to the next technical point, would be somewhere around 1375 to 1385. Now, what I've been looking at on new crop beans, I don't know if we can get them to 12 or not, but I think somewhere in here between 1175 and 12 is a place to put some downside price protection in place. You know, or market your grain. Now, I was talking to a group of farmers in Wynn, Arkansas yesterday, and I think the bids in Memphis, Tennessee, or West Memphis is about 35 over the November. I don't know what we are here, here in the Boot Hill, but where are you at?
49.5 for December.
Over?
Yep.
What I said, basically.
55 in Memphis.
For next fall?
No.
No,
yeah, I'm talking about next fall.
You're talking
over.
New crop.
20 over.
30 over.
30 over?
So
30 over in Memphis.
What I'm looking at, I didn't think anybody had any old crop beans. I thought you guys had those all sold.
We know better than that. Come on.
Well, basically what the strong basis level is telling us is that demand is outpacing supply at the moment. And therefore, when you look down the road, we're going to have a minimum carryover. So fall, nearby bases is strong because the market needs those beans to get down to New Orleans and get them loaded on a ship, because we've already sold like 95% of what we were supposed to sell. Okay, why you have a stronger basis for the fall is going to be very similar to what we had in corn the past couple years, is we're going to have a very tight ending stocks inventory come August. So the market is going to be wanting early harvested beans. And where's the early harvested beans come from? From here south. So this is why you have some pretty good basis bids for new crop soybeans. And I think $12 cash beans, you need to defend that, either with a minimum price contract or a cash forward contract, and maybe buy a call on top of it in case something goes haywire on the weather front. But I think those need to be defended. Now, we talk about corn acreage or soybean acreage going up. You know, the front corn-soybean ratio is like 3-1, but your new crop is more like 2.5-1, and that's kind of a neutral state. When the market wants to buy corn, it's down to 2-1. When the market wants to buy soybeans, it's up to 3-1, and that's why we're seeing more bean acres in South America. This 2.5-1, I think, is going to get the more marginal acres outside of the flat and black dirt in the heart of the Midwest. The heart of the Midwest is probably going to take more than 2.5-1 to take acres out of production. But I do think the fringe areas around the circle of the big black dirt area were buying bean acres. And my guess is, if I take a show of hands, I'm not going to ask anybody to do that, but I imagine there's been an increase in soybean intentions in this crowd. There was yesterday in Wynn, Arkansas.
And there was, yes, last night, not Mark. Okay. We talked more about corn than they were.
And I've even, when I was up in Central Illinois last week, I visited with a couple elevator, and they said farmers were even there thinking about beans because they would lose less planting beans than corn. So they're talking about minimizing losses rather than maximizing profits. So it does look like we're going to see some kind of switch. As we all know, Mother Nature at the end of the day has a lot to say about that in April and May. But I do think when you look at $4 corn, or even $4.60, I guess, on December corn, and we're in a carry market now, if we could get that futures up into the 480 to 510 area, you've got to defend that also. with a minimum price contract, if you're going to go that route. Now, it's not means that you sell the whole farm, but you need to think about defending some of this stuff from what we look at. But as soon as we tell you to sell it all, South America is going to turn hot and dry and it's going to mix everything up. Or one of my May 31st freezes all the way down the Ohio Valley is going to happen.
Or a snowstorm here.
Your mind's relayed a little bit. I'm wondering, given what you've heard, whether I would be positive that you're not reconsidering your bearish agriculture, but you may be recalculating where the starting point for pricing might be. Is it and pricing defend? Is it higher? Will it last half hour than it was prior to the point, or not? And where would you start?
Well, I've already started.
I know you already started. I didn't have anything done. Where would you start today?
I think this will be hard for corn to get beyond $5, and I really do. So I think from $4.85 on up, I don't think beans are a bad hedge right in here. And particularly, like I didn't mention, I've sold about half the beans I'm going to produce next year on a basis contract at 30 over short futures and sold the basis. I could just fix the whole thing in the elevator, but I like carrying futures rather than making sales to elevators, because if you decide to change your crop mix later on, you can pull in your short futures and plant corn if you're in beans or vice versa. And I've certainly done that several times in the past. I have changed. Dan makes some really good points, and I agree. I really haven't changed. I'm very worried about what's going to happen in China. That really, really concerns me as a farmer. I've been on the Ukraine-Russia kick for years, thinking they're going to up their production and yield per acre, and that's happened as we speak. It's happening every year, and it's just going to keep on happening. Now, world population is flattening out. Clearly, in all the industrialized world, we're actually probably in negative population growth. One thing I will say, in talking about dollars, I'm very concerned about the dollar getting hurt too. Here I'm talking really, really bearish on prices, but on the other hand, I want to book all the inputs I can book when they're reasonable. Like the other day I booked urea at 360. Well, last year we paid 490, so I figured saving us about $30 an acre or more. Diesel, I think the downside of crude oil is fairly large, so I'm not in any hurry to do that, but if you can book as many inputs while you're booking crops, at least you're not hanging out too bad. The only thing you're hanging out on is do you make the yields, and that depends on your area. Right around here, you're heavily irrigated, as in my area. The Delta is unbelievable. You couldn't believe it unless you drove it. Every year, it is more and more irrigation going in. I think it's 75% hedge irrigated as we speak, and I keep thinking we're going to run out of land to level, and we're still at it. We got something called multi-slope laser leveling now, which is bringing in hillier land that couldn't be leveled. Well, it's getting leveled. I've got some of it. So these are things to think about.
About gross income, about net income.
It's all net. And really, if you can lock up, and I notice, I may be a conspiracy person, but I notice the price of fertilizer tends to go with the price of corn.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't go with the price of gas.
There's
no correlation with natural gas, which is made out of it. It's been cheap for years. So when corn goes up, natural fertilizer goes up. Now the corn's been going down, fertilizer. And I think we'll probably see some of that in seed prices, too.
Give these folks a nice round of applause.
This program was recorded the 11th day of December 2013. Our panelists included Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.